Oh, hey, I'm glad you're here, or there, or wherever you are, at whatever age you're at, it doesn't matter. No, for this special episode, and we will do one of these every season or so, for this moment, we're traveling back in time, to when many of us solidified our tastes in music and movies. Of course, I'm referring to our teens, those 7 years of some of the highest highs and the lowest lows, but in between those life experiences, many of us were in the cinematic temples, also known as theaters, being imprinted upon by the cinematic gods. I mean, where were you when at 13 years of age your teenage eyes witnessed something of pure magic on that enormous screen? Where you walked back out into the sunlight a changed 13-year-old? Or that fateful sleepover at 14 when Chad busted out his older brother's VHS copy of something meant for older eyes? The next morning, returning home, you thought, well, there was me as a child before, but due to Caligula, I am now a different person. You get what I mean. It didn't have to be Caligula. And those experiences are different for everyone, and I hope you enjoy these special episodes as much as I do. This is the first. I have a few more special guests I'm finalizing, so without further rigmarole, I don't know if that's a word, we'll just keep moving. All right, here we go. This is VHS Presents Screen Teens. Welcome to VHS Presents Screen Teens, our alt format where we talk about the things we've seen on screens in our teens. I'm your host, Eric Marshall. Our guest for this episode, for this format, and it's the first time ever, is Matt Bledsoe. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Dirk, especially on the first episode of this. I'm very excited. I've been thinking about it for a while. I will tell you, when you pitched me this idea, within like a day or two, I'd written everything out. I was very excited to talk about these movies. It was like the fastest I've ever prepped for any podcast. I was like, oh, that was kind of easy. I was Googling and I was like, got it. Got my list. So I've been ready and waiting for a while.
That's wonderful to hear, because it was an idea that I had that I was never going to do. And I threw it out to our podcast circle on Discord. And everyone was very supportive and was like, no, do it. Just throw it in once in a while in the series. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to ask Matt Bledsoe. So I'm glad that you're here. People, I'm sure, remember you on this podcast from our episode tackling Project Metal Beast for all the projects.
How could they forget?
I mean, a legend. But especially, you are the host of the Film Feast podcast, which I had the pleasure of guesting on, where we ranked all of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sequels.
And we survived.
Yes. We did, and it affected me in positive and negative ways. Positive in the way that I would love to do anything like that again, and now I'm looking at different horror franchises, and I'm like, because I've never thought about them this way. I know some people, like, with the Halloween and the whatnot, they get very into, like, I like 4 and not 6 or whatever. I've just always taken these sequels on as they've come and just watched them and whatever. But now, like, getting to sort of look at it and rank it in personal preference is quite a fun project. So I was very thankful you had me on.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. It was fun. I mean, it was not so fun to watch the movies.
Right.
A couple of the movies. To talk about it and rank them was fun. And yes, people seemed to really like it. So, yeah, it was a good time. I think we joked about Hellraiser. That might be the one that's, like, a bridge too far. Because I did that voluntarily once, right, a few years ago. And I don't think I could do it again.
No, I think New World Pictures podcast also ranked all of them. And
yes,
I mean,
I remember when they did it, I said Godspeed, because it's going to be brutal.
Very, very, very tough. But we'll see. There's some good stuff out there. We'll see what triggers this. Now, the way this all works out is I ask each guest to select one movie that they saw theatrically from each year that they were in their teens. Just films that played a role in forming their cinematic taste. So these aren't required to be favorites or best ofs in any way, but rather just one movie from each year that contributed to who the cinephile you are today is. We do allow each guest one SPP, or Slumber Party Pick, which is an opportunity to select one movie that you rented, saw at a friend's house, or in any way were exposed to outside of the cinema that contributed more, we'll say, than any film you saw in the theater that year. Basically, the idea is, like, oftentimes it's discussed in your teenage years, music, you start to formulate, like, I like this band, or I'm into grunge or rap or heavy metal or whatever. But it also happens with movies, and I think by breaking this up by year, we can see this, some of the small little stepping stones that created the patchwork passionate cinephile that you are today. So Matt, how was the process for you?
It was fun. I mean, it was simple, actually. I literally, we talked about the years that I was a teenager. So I went to Google and I said movies of this year. And then I said, oh, yes, I love that movie. And it was shockingly easy for me because the favorites really jumped out. I already had some ideas and I was like, then once I Googled, I was like, oh, yeah, that movie, that movie. The only hard part was sometimes trying to pick one movie. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, I might try to work some other multiple picks into a year. I can land on a favorite, but I think 04 is the year I have 4 picks written down.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's tough sometimes. But, like, it was super fun. It was actually very easy when I was, like, after, like, 15 minutes, like, I was done. I was like, good, got it.
Wow.
We did just talk before we started, kind of clarifying. I was like, okay, I'll switch this out. But, yeah, no, it was a fun process. And I looked at the movies I have listed. I'm like, yeah, these all really deeply influenced me. And also, I realized I feel like I'm really, like, a basic 30-year-old white guy film fan. I didn't know that was a thing when I was a teenager doing this, and I got onto the internet and found out, oh, right, we all kind of like the same movies and have the same story. Yeah. Guys of a certain taste. You'll see very clearly what my tastes are. But yeah, it should be interesting.
Yeah, well, I think by doing it theatrically, it is very limiting by taking the randomness out of the video store, because we do find different avenues and things that we're interested in. I've heard you talk about a variety of films, but when you look at like the specific years of a teenager and theatrically in the States, there's not a lot that, I mean, there is a lot that's cut out.
Right.
For me, foreign cinema, independent cinema, a lot of that stuff wasn't making its way to our theaters in the small town I lived in, but very mm-hmm. much became something I was interested in later on. So it's not that we're saying this is all Matt Bledsoe is into, but we will be saying that when he was 13, 14, 15, these might have been some of the big films for him to see, for sure.
Yeah, these were all definitely, it left an impact, I'll say. They left an impact on me, for sure.
First one, Deep Impact. Wait, what? What year was that?
No. Never actually seen Deep Impact, funny enough.
Me neither. No, I somehow missed that one. That was like The Core. Is it like one of those movies? Is it a meteor film?
I believe so.
This is good for a movie podcast. I'll bring up a film that I don't know anything about, and then we'll talk about not knowing it. That's a bummer. I think Quentin Tarantino was just chastising podcasts for this very same thing.
Oh. Well, sorry, Quentin, if he's listening.
Yeah, he's a big fan. He's a big, big fan. Before we get to the first pick, I will say at the end of each pick, I will tell you my pick that I thought you would have selected for each year, which I base on absolutely nothing. So here we go.
Oh, well, that's the part I'm excited about, is see what you picked and see. Yes. I feel like you're going to get some
I don't think so.
Knowing me a little bit, you're going to pick some very easily. So we will see.
All right, perfect. All right, well then, we're off to the races. We start in the year 2000, a year with over 200 movies playing in theaters, a year when How the Grinch Stole Christmas was the top grossing film, but we also got Space Cowboys, Bicentennial Man, and Chocolat. Which of these is the pick of a 13-year-old Matt Bledsoe? I don't know. 13 is a year also when Elliott Smith released Figure 8, Belle and Sebastian released their album Fold Your Hands, Child, You Walk Like a Peasant, and Limp Bizkit released the classic album Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. I mean, will Matt then choose Chocolat? Also in this year, Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston marry, and Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton. It was wild times, but imagine being 13. So, Matt, what is your pick?
Okay, so my pick is, you know what's funny? The first thing I thought of was the movie Memento, by Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
But I didn't see Memento in a theater. And I realized, no, there's a movie that's more important to me than Memento, which is Mission Impossible 2, directed by the great John Woo, because I realized, wow, no, that movie was really big for me because it was the first John Woo movie I saw in a theater.
Love it.
I remember the first time we were seen because he was making, you know, radar action movies and I wasn't allowed to see those. I've told stories on my podcast about my mom having to describe action movies to me because she went on dates to go see them. And then I was like, tell me about Face Off. Tell me about Broken Arrow. I was like, you know, wanted to hear the plot. So pretty sure my first John Woo, definitely first John Woo in a theater. And that sent me on a path of who is this guy? I thought it was like one of the coolest movies I've ever seen. The motorcycle chase near the end is still amazing. I love the whole movie, honestly. It gets a lot of crap in the Mission Impossible franchise because it's not like the movies now at all. I think they went in very different directions. Mm-hmm. It's not like the first movie. It's not like the movies that come after it. It's very weird in that series. Like, it's very John Woo still. It's gunfights and doves and slow motion. It's all you want, you know, and I thought it was awesome. I was so into it. I was so deeply invested in Mission Impossible 2 that I remember watching Entertainment Tonight or something the weekend after it came out because I wanted to see if it won number one at the box office.
Oh, wow.
And I was, like, rooting for the box office. I was like, yeah, because I was that into the movie that I wanted to win number one.
It was, oh, I love that.
Very strange. I was a strange child. See, this is, like, other kids. I'm like, I'm rooting for movie box office numbers. Like,
well, you're 13 playing sports? And you're seeing something awesome. Also, you're talking to someone who doesn't play sports either. So I would be right there. I'd be like, yes, you want something awesome to be successful, like, for sure. I didn't see, well, I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen a single Mission Impossible movie. I know. It's
Dirk, they're wonderful. It's they're crazy. Really good.
I should. I will at some point. But I remember the ads for this film, and I think Tom Cruise does like a front wheelie. I don't know if that has a different name on the motorcycle. And it's like, it looks awesome in the trailer.
Pure cinema, dude. Yeah. It's like, that was the moment where I was like, this is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
Because he does the front wheelie and then shoots a gun and the car blows up. It's like, that's what I like in a nutshell. Like right there, like in that little moment, that kind of stuff is like the coolest stuff. Then I was like, I got to see more John Woo movies. And that led me to Hard Boiled, The Killer.
Love it.
Very hard to get my hands on.
Mm-hmm.
As a 13-year-old with not living in like a big city, you know, so I had to find those like years later on like old DVDs. But I was like, Mission Impossible 2 is definitely, that led me on a whole different path to like finding John Woo and Hong Kong action movies and a whole thing. So still love that movie so much. I will defend it all the time.
That is fantastic. I love it. I love that you mentioned Memento also. I had just moved to Seattle that year. And so Memento did play in a little art house theater because it was, you know, the select cities I'd heard about my entire freaking life. And I finally lived in a city that was a select city. And so I did get to see Memento in a small, albeit theater. And it was great. But I'll have to watch Mission Impossible 2 and see if it's better.
I don't even know if better. Just more important to me, yes. Mission Impossible 2, definitely. Like,
that's
Memento's
what this is
great.
All about.
But. You know, and plus I saw it, I don't know, a year or two later on DVD. So it wouldn't count anyway. But yeah, Mission Impossible 2 is definitely the pick. And that's the one I thought was kind of weird. I don't know if that was your guess. I'm so curious now.
Oh, yes. Well, my prediction was Dr. T and the Women. So I was close.
That came out in 2000?
I don't know.
I thought that's it was earlier.
That's what my sources said. So maybe it was just still in the theater because it was such a powerful juggernaut of cinema. But no, 13-year-old Matt Bledsoe was not into Dr. T and the Women. Starting off what might be a tragic streak of predictions for myself.
Oh, boy.
Okay, well.
Can't wait to see how this goes.
As we turn a page in the life of Matt, it becomes 2001. Young Matt is 14. The choices? Hundreds yet again. Would he be most moved by the heartfelt epic Pearl Harbor? Or would a 14-year-old Matt be inspired by the perfect chemistry in Exit Wounds between Steven Seagal and DMX? Did he identify with Jeffrey Rush and the Marquis de Sade in Quills? Or perhaps Hedwig in The Angry Inch? It's hard to say what film a 14-year-old Matt Bledsoe would pick. It's difficult to predict, but maybe if we look at television, the debut of Lizzie McGuire on Disney, Invader Zim on Nickelodeon, and The Ellen Show, would this influence the 14-year-old Matt? Only time will tell, and that time is right now. Matt, what did you choose?
Well, this is going to be really tough because I'm going to pull my slumber party pick out.
There it is,
here.
The SPP. Here we go.
Because we had a conversation before we started recording, but about I was kind of messed up on this year, and I looked at the releases, and I was like, I don't know if anything that came out in theaters really struck me. I maybe because I saw an 02, I'm sure, but I'm going to say it's a 01. I don't have anything else. But it's a still important movie. I have two. They go hand in hand. I wonder if you'll let me do this. So hear me out. Reservoir Dogs by Tarantino.
Right.
I saw that at a friend's house on TV, and I was like, well, this is really cool. What is this? And
at 14.
Immediately went at 14.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. This is very cool.
And it was, I mean, you know, at that point it was like, oh, this is really cool and edgy and all this stuff. We went to FYE, which I think a few of those still exist.
They do.
And
I just
in the mall.
Saw one at the mall. Yeah.
They're still kind of hanging on. And they had Reservoir Dog DVDs. If you remember, they had different colors for each of the guys and they had their faces. It was like each guy had his own separate slipcover for the movie. Very ahead of their time on the slipcover game. So I think I got the only one that was left, which was Mr. Brown, which was Tarantino. And I went home and poured into this DVD.
Nice.
This Reservoir Dogs DVD. I don't know how much stuff got poured over to the Blu-ray, but this DVD maybe more fundamental to my movie love than almost anything, because that DVD is packed with great stuff. They talk about the class of 92 at Sundance with Robert Rodriguez and El Mariachi, and I think Allison Anders comes up, and a bunch of other indie filmmakers, and how big that year was. Tarantino talks about a bunch of influences I at that point had either never heard of or barely heard of, like Godard and Melville and John Woo and a bunch of people. And it was like getting all this film knowledge at one time from this DVD. Yeah. And I went through like every single special feature. I was completely obsessed. And then that led me, of course, to Pulp Fiction the same year. So they kind of go hand in hand. That became my Tarantino obsession and my film obsession.
That's a powerful SPP double play, and we're going to let it. we'll let it go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I immediately sought out Pulp Fiction after seeing Reservoir Dogs. I know that. I was like, this guy has another movie? And then later got to Jackie Brown, because at that point, that was all he had was, those three movies. It was 01. So, and I found Pulp Fiction. It was like, well, this is even better than Reservoir Dogs. Like, I was losing my mind. And then that was when I started thinking, oh, I want to make movies. I want to be a director. Because he made it seem so attainable. That's the thing that people, I think, forget about Tarantino is, like, we like him for a lot of reasons. But one thing was he made being a director seem so doable, because he didn't go to film school. He's just a guy that worked in the video store and made movies. He got to make movies, and it was all very inspiring and influential, and led me to a bunch of other stuff that I found and sought out. It was crazy how much that did. That even that DVD, I don't know, but I don't know how much still existing on that Blu-ray, but I keep that DVD just because of how much it means to me. So those two movies, it was like my mind exploded. Like, you know, if something happens, you're just like, my whole world has changed now after seeing those, as corny as that may sound. But I know how baseline basic that is for people who love movies around my age, but I mean, truly, it was like those two movies were very, very big for me. And at the time, I was like, I want to go to film school, even though Tarantino didn't go to film school. So I don't know why I went to film school.
Yeah, you should have worked at Blockbuster.
Oh, I did try to get a job at the video store in my town, and they would not hire me. I was very upset. I tried multiple times.
That is rude. I love a lot of things about this. One, I love that you saw Reservoir Dogs first and then Pulp Fiction. That's how I saw it. I know a lot of people didn't. They saw Pulp Fiction and then had to go back. And I think seeing that first film is... it was different than everything else that was out there. When we got the promo tape, it didn't even have a cover or anything. And I watched it and was just like, what is this? And I just thought, it's another indie. Like, it was just an indie thriller crime thing. And then you start to notice the cast that he's assembled for the films. And then there's no way that's not going to, if you love movies, spiderweb out to these people's individual careers. And, you know, then you get the influences, the things that now we know who this director is. And he's talked about a variety of, like you said, Godard, everything. It was probably exciting when he said John Woo, because you're like, he loves Mission Impossible 2 as well.
Oh, well, he keyed me in more on the other John Woo movies. I was like, oh, Better Tomorrow? What is this? Yes, I gotta find this, you know,
this and
like,
down.
There was a bunch of stuff. I mean, it's just, I can't believe how much I got from that one DVD. It's like, it's
I
just crazy.
I love that, because that's also at a time when there isn't a ton of things. I mean, some stuff's being put out on DVDs, but we were barely out of the part where we would see special features subtitles, and you're like, oh, cool. Interactive menu. Oh, fun, a menu I can interact with. What? Like, but that's what it would say on the back of DVDs. And then you get this, and it's got all these bonus supplements that you can pour over. And you know, that's what I did as well with movies and music, is I would just like get everything out, look at everything, read everything I could on the booklets or the backs of the boxes or whatever. Yeah, that hunger. I love it. I love that. Okay, well, my prediction was Osmosis Jones, so I was pretty close.
I did see that in a theater. I did see it. I kind of liked it. I'm going to say. It's pretty gross, but the Bill Murray zit thing will still haunt me.
Yeah, can't really hold a candle to a double Quentin Tarantino, though, so.
I mean, it's a tough act to follow. So then, after that, the doors are blown open after that year when I see those two movies. It's just like, give me all the cinema. Like,
yes, give me everything. Well, that's perfect, because next we find ourselves with a 15-year-old, Matt. And at 15, you can get a learner's permit. It's 2002. There's hundreds of films playing. Somehow, they're releasing these, including so many huge blockbusters like Men in Black 2, Star Wars Episode 2, Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, Spider-Man. The numbers are crazy when you look at what these movies are pulling in. But will Matt be most moved to Road to Perdition or Snow Dogs? Will the Osbournes hitting TV affect his choice? Or The Wire winning an Emmy? Or Eddie Bauer releasing Spillproof Khakis? These things all happened when you were 15. but only you can tell us, Matt. So what is your pick for this year?
I saw these facts. It's a real trip down memory lane. I don't remember the spilt-proof khakis, but the Osbournes was big. People forget. I was watching that every week. So if we had gone back to like farther and we had 98 in a year,
sure,
my choice would have been Blade. But we're in 2002.
Right.
So my choice is Blade 2, which I snuck in to see because I had to see Blade 2 because I was obsessed with the first Blade.
Same.
And I'd waited 4 long years for Blade 2. And it was awesome, and it's still awesome.
It's still awesome, and we know why now, but I don't know if we really knew why at the time.
Del Toro?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know who he was.
Right.
I had no idea. I was just there for Wesley Snipes' Blade. I think after the movie, I was like, who's this director? Because I liked him. A DVD I was obsessed with because I listened to the commentary like all the time, because they're super entertaining. There's a Guillermo del Toro and a producer commentary. And then there's David Gordon and Wesley Snipes commentary, which is funny because the Del Toro one is very like informative and, you know, about how they made them. And then the Snipes Goyer one is like them two just cracking up for like 2 hours and making jokes. At one point, even I think one of them says, oh, we're just doing a Mystery Science Theater 3000 on this movie. We're just making fun of it. Both very fun. But I was obsessed with Blade 2. And I was so happy I saw it in a theater because I somehow pulled that one off. I don't know how I snuck in, but I just was like, I have to get in this thing opening weekend. So definitely Blade 2 for 02.
Yeah, that's perfect. I saw the first one in the theater, the Bloodbath Vampire Club situation set to New Order's Confusion remix was like, I had that remix album, and to hear that in a mainstream film, I was like, what is happening right now? Because it wasn't a new single. That means that whoever was doing the soundtrack was like, this song's badass, put it in this scene. I loved it. And then the second one, I loved it, and then realized after I'd seen it, that it was from the director that did The Devil's Backbone, which was one of my favorite movies I saw when I lived in Seattle. Same thing, I saw it by myself in the same theater that showed Memento, and it blew me away. And then I was like, he did an action movie? Like, I didn't know he was going to go to Hellboy and all this stuff, but it was really, really mind-boggling to me. But yeah, Blade 2, excellent, excellent pick. I don't know the soundtrack for that. Did it have an amazing soundtrack like the first one?
It had some really good songs. Oh, God. I can't think of it. I can think of the songs I like in the movie. There's a scene where they're like walking into the club in slow motion. That's really cool. Can't remember who it's by. There's a song where they're like doing like the suiting up, gearing up sequence, which I feel like is
quintessential.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone who the names are. But and there's Name of the Game by Crystal Method. Is there in the fight scene?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which I love that because of that fight scene.
Name of the Game. Up.
Yeah. And then, there's actually a lot of good songs on the Blade 2 soundtracks.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll have to look that up. I do enjoy looking up soundtracks in the evening. My wife and I will be sitting on the couch watching whatever, and we'll be like, what was Soul Asylum's other hits? And then you'll like just look up, like, I did that one just last night. We got 2 songs in. She's like, I've never heard this song in my life. And I'm like, okay, well, sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you're like Crystal Method, and you'll know like 5 songs or something. But yeah, and then I'll be like, you know, I did the Crow soundtrack and Judgment Night. I mean, there's a lot of ones that are just like
great soundtracks.
Yeah, super solid Blade. But since you said Blade 2, I was like, you know what? That's probably tonight. Probably tonight I'm going to crack open a cold one and listen to the Blade 2 soundtrack. Well, my prediction was Made in Manhattan. So I missed Blade 2 by a little bit.
I love these picks you're making.
Thank you.
I will say, I was curious to see if you... Because now I know what you're doing. But I kind of was curious to see how nail on the head you would get. Because I thought a couple of these would be like really obvious. But this is funnier.
Yeah.
I do appreciate your commitment to a bit. Like I think I
Thank
said
you.
On the Texas Chainsaw Massacre episode, I loved what you've seen at least recently. I think it was all chainsaw related movies.
Yes.
And I was like, I appreciate a good long bit that you're committed to. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. That's basically my life is committing
a long running comedy bit.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll plant this seed and we'll see the punchline in about 3 years. Okay. So, well, here we are, 16 years old, 2003. Things are getting serious. Matt can operate an automobile for one thing. It's a year where we get Finding Nemo and 28 Days Later. Geely and A House of 1,000 Corpses, so many choices here. It's also a year when Skippy squeeze sticks come out. That's right, peanut butter in a finger-sized squeezable tube was released, and 50 Cent's In Da Club is number one above everything else. Proof that anything's possible, I think. So, Matt, what is your 16-year-old 2003 pick?
Well, he's driving around in his Pontiac Sunfire that he just got with his driver's license, probably listening to In the Club because that song was huge.
Huge.
And going to see a movie that I was anticipating, like you would not believe, Kill Bill Volume 1.
Oh, Tarantino's back.
I set him up 2 years ago, and then I was like over the moon, crazy excited about this movie. I had an Entertainment Weekly magazine, I think, that I was just reading over and over, getting ready for the movie. Because again,
that,
he's like listing influences and what it's going to be like. And it's a whole article about, I think, about the making of the movie. And I'm like, this sounds like the best movie I've ever made. Like, you know, I don't even know at that point if they announced it was going to be two volumes. There was going to be one 4-hour movie.
I don't feel like it was. I feel like when we first knew about it, it was just Kill Bill. And then it became Kill Bill Volume 1.
Yeah. Even the first teaser trailer just said Kill Bill, and I don't think there was volumes. At some point, they realized we can't release a 4-hour revenge movie in a theater. But, you know, I get it. But so Kill Bill Volume 1, which I'm so excited about. Snuck in to see that one, too. Again, don't know how I pulled that off, but I was not good at being sneaky, but I somehow got in. And by myself, I'm going to see this opening weekend. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get in. And I did. And again, it was another mind-blowing experience. Led me to many more influences, because that movie is almost more than anything else he's done. I guess both parts together are just so chock full of everything. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I see Shaw Brothers behind you. The bunch of Shaw Brothers stuff.
Lady Snowblood.
Yes, Lady Snowblood. De Palma. Who else? I mean, there's Spaghetti Western stuff in Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much. There's an anime sequence. Like, you know, it's just, I loved it. That's the point. I was like, this is incredible. Tarantino is still my king at that point. It was great. It was an amazing experience. It felt so cool going to see an R-rated movie by myself. That was something I was like really passionate about seeing. And it was very fun. So
perfect. Third Tarantino in your teenage pick. I love it. Let's flesh out the Matt Bledsoe teenage years. Were you someone that was into, we already covered not into sports, were you into video games? Was there a type of music you were really identifying with? What else was going on for you during these first 3 years?
Oh, yes. Okay, this is good. So Matt Bledsoe getting slowly more confident and losing weight over those 3 years, too.
Okay.
Once I got the car and I had like a summer between sophomore and junior year. Mm-hmm. So I was driving. I lost a bunch of weight. I came back to school. Everyone's like, oh, Matt Bledsoe is a whole different guy now. I was never that cool. I got into that middle section, I feel like, where the popular kids are friendly with you, but you're not part of the circle. We had a very distinct popular kid circle, and I was at least friendly with them. But I was not in that bottom tier where it's life is hell. I was in a nice middle, and I didn't do any sports. Point, someone told me, a counselor, my mom was like, you got to get involved in these for college because you do nothing. were good. I was an honor student. My grades were good, but I didn't do any extra activities. Like, someone signed me up to be on the tech team for drama club for like one semester. I didn't get that responsibility. I was like pulling curtains or something. I was like given very little responsibility in the drama club. And I quit after like one semester. I was like, I don't want to do this. And then I was too busy watching movies and playing video games. I was a very screen obsessed child from a very young age. And I was talking recently, I think. Oh, it was my friend Anthony King about summer camp movies on my show.
Yes.
And I talked about how did not want to go to a summer camp because my ideal summer was staying at home, going to the pool, playing GTA Vice City all day on my PlayStation, watching TV. I was watching a lot of Kids in the Hall on SNL during the day, watching Howard Stern at night, which Jim was watching, staying up late to watch Conan O'Brien.
Yep.
I was always a screen kid. I felt like I was just into games, into movies. Somehow I thought got kind of funny. I don't know. I was obsessed with comedy too. I was obsessed with SNL. Like I said, SNL, Kids in the Hall, and like Conan. I was like, if I can be funny, I was like, I can do that.
There it is.
People will like me. That's the trick. And I remember always hearing Chris Farley, I think, because I was a large boy. And he was like, I think to avoid getting picked on, basically, you just got to get ahead of the jokes and make people laugh. So I felt like I was always trying to do comedy. And I thought at one point as a young teenager, I was like, I can be on SNL one day. I could be a cast member.
Yeah.
Not knowing how difficult that is. Weirdly enough, I graduated with a future SNL cast member named Jay Farrow.
Ah.
Literally went to my high school, graduated the same year. We knew each other from second grade.
Whoa.
Crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. I told that story on the Hackers episode of my podcast.
All I remember is Uber Angel from that episode.
Well, Uber Angel kind of took everything else. But I mean, teenage Matt for those years was kind of lazy. And I was into music a little bit. I was listening to all the, you mentioned Limp Bizkit earlier. Oh my God. I was so into like the angry aggro new metal. Like it was all about Korn and Limp Bizkit and Linkin Park. But then I was also into like rap, like Eminem and DMX, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, stuff I probably shouldn't be listening to, but you know, what are you going to do?
But also, everything you just listed was what was on the radio and MTV, which was inescapable at that time. Crazy. I mean, it was everywhere. It's like, when they weren't playing the videos, they had them, like, come on TRL and stuff. They're like, here's Marshall Mathers, and he'd waddle in looking miserable, and they'd have him throw to, like, a Britney Spears video, and I was watching that. It was just what you did.
That TRL was huge. I was watching it too. Yeah. And it was such a bizarre time. I try to explain to people, I think younger than me, or like just tell people when we're watching, like, yeah, it was a time where you could boy bands, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, but then also mixing with like Korn and Limp Bizkit and Eminem, and it made no sense. And it'd be like one day Backstreet Boys number one, the next day Korn's number one. And it's so weird they coexisted at the same time. Yeah. And of course, I couldn't say I liked any of those songs, many of those pop, you know, artists. I had to be too cool, but I'm like, this Backstreet Boys song is kind of catchy, but I can't tell anyone. But I got to keep my hardcore demeanor. No, I just
street.
I thought
got to keep your street cred, Matt Bledsoe's street cred.
And my Pontiac Sunfire. I don't know. Yeah, I liked all that stuff that was popular, that kind of new metal and rap and all that. Yeah, I don't know. I just I always felt like kind of just I was likable. And I got through the middle and just, I just wanted to be in the middle. I didn't want to be popular. I didn't want to be getting garbage thrown at me at school.
Sure.
I just want to exist in this nice middle air. People like me and I'm friendly. And I was so obsessed with movies. I was reading Roger Ebert's great movie book somewhere in that time. I got those for Christmas. And he was another guy that was, again, I'm a weird child.
I was like, hope there's a photo of you at Christmas holding up one of those books. Tell me that that exists.
There's not, you know, I shouldn't tell the story, but you know, what's so funny is I just was going through old photos I had, and my family was constantly giving me crap because I had a huge crush on Britney Spears. And it was a running joke.
That's like a huge pop singer. What's there to tease about that?
I was so in love with her. And they were giving me, I think they thought it was funny. They were like, oh, you probably like her music. And I was like, no, I just like her. I don't, some catchy songs, I'll admit. But I just found a photo. I was going through old photos. I think I took this one specifically to burn for my mom. It's me holding a Britney Spears calendar sitting on a fireplace at Christmas because it was like a running joke for them to buy me a Britney Spears calendar for like 3 or 4 years in a row. So those photos of the Roger Ebert books don't exist, but the Britney Spears calendar photo exists for now until I destroy it.
If we can get a Britney Spears calendar to you for Christmas, can we get a recreation of that photo?
I don't know. I'd almost rather just share the photo I have.
Okay.
And I don't know if I could do it again. That photo can't exist. I mean, you know, I had a Britney Spears poster on my wall. Like, I was in love with her.
Wow.
Yeah, I was really upset.
I love the idea of you listening to Freak on a Leash in front of a Britney Spears poster.
I was like a walking, breathing TRL in my room. Yeah, it's like, very I'm complex. Listening to Korn and Linkin Park, and I'm like, I love you, Britney. Oh boy, I've said too much on this podcast.
Is a place without judgment. We're talking about the teen years. I mean, lots of people are trying stuff on. I knew a guy who was like a different person every week for a while in the teen years. He was all decked out in snowboard gear, which is weird because we didn't have snow around, but he was like, that's what he was into. And then the next time he was like a rave DJ, and it's just like, you're just trying on different things. Be like, does this fit? Or am I into this? Or I'll read a little bit about this or buy this album, but that doesn't mean I'm all Natalie Merchant. I just liked the one single, you know, it's just like different for everybody. So this is a judgment-free place. My pick for you for this year was the SPP pick. And I said Pulp Fiction, but it's because you had asked via message. And so I was like, 2003, I think, is when he saw maybe Pulp Fiction. And so that's when I was throwing it out there. But we already covered it, so I didn't have a silly.
Okay, you were very close. It's still a Tarantino movie.
That's right. All right. Well... 2004, Matt's 17. He can almost vote in a political fashion, but he can vote on what he sees in a theater. Options? Well, let's take a look. Saw, Napoleon Dynamite, Fat Albert, Jersey Girl, and Welcome to Mooseport all played in theaters this year. Will A Dark Day affect his selection as Friends ends its 10-year run and starts a Joey spinoff nobody asked for? Will the death of Rodney Dangerfield cause Matt to constantly watch Ladybugs this year? It's hard to say, but let's find out when Matt tells us his pick for 2004 at the age of 17.
You just said so much. I'm having to take it all in. Like, I didn't know Ryan Dangerfield died that long ago. I thought he lived longer than that. I forgot they all came out in 04. I'm shocked. I'm like, those, what? I forgot what else you already said. But yeah, that was so much.
Welcome to Mooseport is the good.
Yeah, the movie that made Gene Hackman retire from acting.
Yeah.
So I've never seen it, but I've heard nothing but bad things.
More like farewell to Mooseport, thank you very much.
This was the hardest year. I have four possible picks that I'm still looking at on my plate.
And I wonder, and I'm interested, since this is the first ever of the Screen Teens, do you feel like it's because of the quality of the films that you were interested in? Do you think it's relative to your age and how much of a film lover you were? Or do you feel like it's just the luck of the draw that these four fantastic films came out at the same time?
I think it's just kind of luck of the draw. Because when I Googled it, most time it was easy. One popped up and I was like, that's it. When I was looking at 04, I was like, oh shit, all four of these could easily be my answer. And I don't know how to parse out which is most important. Okay, I think because we've already talked about one thing that's similar to one of them. Mm-hmm. One thing I think is going to come up next year, or director's going to come up next year, so I'll save that one. I'm going to talk about, I'll tell you the other ones, but my pick is going to be Collateral, Michael Mann's Collateral.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
You have not seen Collateral. It's very good.
I
know. Very, very good.
That's what I hear. I've heard you mention it. I think you talked about it on a podcast. Couldn't tell you which one. And I was like, I got to see
do a lot of that.
Collateral. This is another Tom Cruise joint, correct?
It's another Tom Cruise joint. Okay. It's I did a Shock and Awe with Lindsay. We did
that's what it was.
Walking the Edge. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Okay. And we did Collateral. And
that's what it was. Yeah.
Yes. It's really good. Michael Mann. Pretty sure the first Michael Mann movie I saw in theaters. I think it would have had to been. And I thought it just, like, starting off, I thought it looked really cool. He was using that digital photography, and it really hadn't been used much or seen much yet. I'm really into film at this point. Really entering my cinephile kind of douchey phase a little bit. But I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. The photography is so different in Collateral. I think Tom Cruise is excellent in the movie. Jamie Foxx is great. And it's funny because I randomly went to go see it with, like, my mom, my stepsister, and my little sister. Which is not usually a group that goes to movies together, let alone
you
Collateral.
Picked it though, right?
Yeah. Like, my sister's younger than me. I'm sure she just was like, why am I here? My mom, I don't know why she went, because she doesn't like action movies or guns or violence of any kind. And then I think maybe she just liked Tom Cruise and thought it's not uber violent, but it's decently violent. I think she was a little shocked, like, oh, it's a little much. I was loving it. I was like, this is great. And it was just like one of those things where I'm like, I got to watch more Michael Mann movies. I really like this Collateral movie. So it was a big deal for that. I think I felt like it influenced me of like the kind of movies I thought I could make at that time. In 04, when I was 17, I pretty much had decided I want to go to some film school for college, which would be the next year in 05. So I was really felt like I was looking at things to be like, oh, maybe I can make a movie like that.
Yeah.
Collateral was right up my alley in that kind of way. So I'll pick, that'll be my main pick. If my three other ones, if you want to hear them really quickly.
Okay, so Collateral's the one, but let's hear
the one for 04. Yeah. These are the three other possibilities. Kill Bill Volume 2, because I just talked about Volume 1. I thought it'd be boring to say Volume 2. But that was a big deal, again, to see that finish up. And I will tell you a funny story. I took a girl I had like just started dating, and it was one of those weird high school relationships where it's like people almost put you together. You know what I mean? You have like friends who like pressure you to date, and then it kind of push you into a thing. And I wasn't that into it. Mm-hmm. Sounds really bad. So I wanted to go see it. And I was like, if you want to go, you can go. But I didn't really. I was like,
nice.
I don't think she wanted to. So I pushed her, and I didn't, because I didn't like her that much. This sounds so mean. I didn't mean like this, but I took her and I was like, if she likes it, she likes it. I'm going to see the movie. And she walked out at one point. I think it's the part where, I know what part it was. Uma Thurman steps on Dale Hannah's eyeball.
Yeah.
And she left the theater. And I was like, I'm not going anywhere. Like, I can't miss this. And I guess kind of douchey at 17. I don't know. But she either came back a few minutes later. I went to go find her and I brought her back in. But she was very upset with me and hated the movie. And it didn't work out, obviously.
Sure.
So that was fun, I guess. And then Spider-Man 2 was huge. At that point, I thought it was like, this is one of the best superheroes I've ever seen. But not hugely influential to me. I just love the movie. I think it's a great movie.
Sure, yeah.
And the one that was really tough, my boy Tony Scott, Man on Fire. Very close. I left that one off because he's going to come up again.
But interesting.
Yeah, so I was like, I'll go with Collateral, Michael Mann, because that was big for me for Michael Mann. But and again, we saw mom in the theater. My mom was petrified of the violence in Man on Fire because he's cutting off fingers.
Yeah.
It's very violent.
Yeah.
But I again loved it. I was eating it up. And I thought this is so great and started my Tony Scott obsession, I would say. So a big year, 04. Very big year, those movies.
Yeah. I think I've shared it on the podcast. It's hard to say, maybe I haven't, but I was a huge Cronenberg fan, and I know you've been covering some Cronenberg films on Film Feast or Schlock and Awe. I forget which one now. I listen to everyone's podcast so much, it's like a big stew in my head.
They all bleed together. Me and Carmelita, we talked about Crash and talked about the whole Cronenberg. So,
yes. And I've always used movies to relate to people. And I'm like, oh, if you want to know me, let's like, I'll show you this movie. It's like a good shorthand. And I was in a relationship and I showed her my VHS of Dead Ringers. And
oh, God.
I was super into it. And she went out on the porch when it ended. It didn't say a word, just left, sat on the porch. And I was like, I don't know what she's doing out there. She doesn't smoke or anything. So I went out there and she was just crying, like sobbing. And I was like, what's going on? And she just looked at me and was like, why would you show that to me? And then I realized we were different people, very different people. Didn't work out. But yeah, sometimes movies can bring people together and it can also
pull them apart. I've gotten much better about that over the years. I'm like, that was a big thing for me when I was younger. I was very bullheaded about movies I really liked. I really wanted girls to watch the ones I liked and like them. I took it really personally if they didn't like them.
Oh yeah.
Completely got over that. I was like, that's really dumb. I was like, I'm not going to force anybody to watch anything I don't think they would like. I know someone's taste and like for now, I mean, there's stuff I know I would not show her because she would probably hate it, so I'm not going to force her to watch it. So yeah, but when I was younger, you got to watch this Tarantino movie. You bet, and, you should like it. It's great. I'm trying to explain. This is cinema. Such a douche.
Anyway. Listen to what he says about Madonna here. You're going to love it.
You're going to love it, I tell you.
Well, my pick for this year was Ella Enchanted. So not...
Never seen it.
Ah.
Sounds delightful.
Well, I bet it was what your little sister wished she was watching instead of Collateral.
And yeah, I think she might have saw Man on Fire too. She probably didn't want to see that either.
She's like, I'll take that Fat Albert movie. I'm serious.
I forgot that came out in 2004. That's insane. I forgot that we almost existed too.
Yeah, time is bizarre. And the older you get, the weirder it gets to be like, oh, yes. That was just like last year, wasn't it? 20 years ago. Where did this...
No, I don't like it.
Oh, yeah. It gets worse. All right. Well, the year is 2005. Matt can go into an adult bookstore. He can buy cigarettes. His tastes are no doubt maturing. The radio is blasting Fall Out Boy, The Gorillaz, and Nickelback, for better or worse. The theaters are packed full of people watching The Devil's Rejects, Dukes of Hazzard, Doom, and Hitch. However, it's not all gravy as Destiny's Child and Blink-182 break up, as well as Brad and Jennifer. Oh, they just got married! Will such sadness damper an 18-year-old Matt's picks? We'll find out right now from Matt's pick from this year.
No, Matt was not dampened by any of this news. 2005, one of my best years ever, I think,
because
I graduated high school.
Yes.
A great year. I don't like to be on those people who's, I think you always hear like the sad guy who wishes he was still in high school. It's like a jock who wears his letterman
jacket.
It's
always
like
a 35. Jock. Yeah.
No. The last half of senior year especially was such a cakewalk. It was like I was barely even going to school because I basically got all my credits done.
Uh-huh.
I was taking only two classes a day. I mean, that was allowed. It wasn't like I was skipping. And I was just living the best life. I had no responsibilities. School was a breeze. I was getting ready to go to college in the fall. I was like, everything was just chef's kiss. It was just so, life's never been so easy since. That's the only thing I miss. And then summer, I'm getting ready to go to college. I'm like, I'm going to film school. I'm going to make movies. I had two picks. I'm going to go with the one I think influenced me more, which is Domino by Tony Scott.
There's the Tony Scott.
There you go. It had to be here. I almost put Man on Fire, but I literally saw Domino that fall when I was at UNC Wilmington, North Carolina, and went to go see it by myself because I was very homesick and very lonely down there. UNC Wilmington was weird because it felt like every kid came from the same high school, so they all knew each other, it felt like.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it felt like. And I'm like, did you all go to the same high school and you're all here now? It was very weird. And I just didn't gel with those people. I didn't party at all. I didn't drink. And I just was not doing it. So I was going to see movies by myself, which I still like to do. But I saw Domino by myself. And I was like, this is the kind of stuff I want to make. Like, I was going and yelling yes. people on campus. I'm like, this is a movie. Like, I just like grab you by the shoulders. I'm like, you got to see this crazy thing. Because I had never seen anything like Domino. Man on Fire, I guess, kind of close. It's also Tony Scott, obviously. It was, to me, so experimental and different and mind-blowing. And I was like, holy shit. Like, this guy is really doing something unique and different. I'm like, this is so inspiring, you know, especially at the time. Nobody cared. It bombed.
Like,
the other kids in the film program didn't seem to care. The film program was weird, too. It started going on a tangent. But at this school, I took a very basic, I think it was like 101 film introduction class. And half the kids there didn't care and were just taking the class, And then the other half of the kids were like super pretentious, artsy film kids. And I always felt like I was in this weird middle ground where I was into more, I don't know the word, trashy or kind of like action type stuff. They all wanted to make their own, what would they make, indie film at the time? You know, just like a quieter little indie movie.
Garden
and I'm like,
State.
I want to make, oh God, I surprised, oh my God, I didn't mention Garden State for 2004. That was a big one.
Yeah.
That was another big one. Sought that out. Had to drive 30, 40 minutes away from my house to find that movie because I'd seen the trailer and I was like, what's that movie? That was a big one. But sorry to get ahead of myself. But yeah, they want to make stuff like that,
which is fine.
But I was like, I want to make Tarantino type movies or big action movies and blow stuff up and shoot guns. And I felt like nobody was really into that. They wanted to make highbrow type stuff, or people in the class just didn't. I would ask them questions and they're like, I've never seen anything by Michael Mann, or, you know, I've seen like one Tarantino movie. And I'm like, one Tarantino movie? How have you only seen Pulp Fiction? It was weird. I was like a man with no country. It was like I was in this weird in-between state where I was trying to find somebody who was in the same stuff I was, and I could not find that person. And Domino's like a perfect encapsulation of that, because I felt like at the time, especially because it bombed, nobody was talking about it. Nobody else had seen it for years. I think it's finally getting a reputation now. No one seemed to care about it. And I thought it was this amazing movie. So Domino's my pick. My almost other pick was Sin City by Robert Rodriguez.
Sure. Yeah.
Who has shockingly not made a appearance on this list. I could have mentioned Once Upon a Time in Mexico, because that was also big in 03, to sneak into theater and see that one. But a little bit of a letdown, that movie. I still like it.
Same.
But, you know. Yeah. But Sin City was very cool. It was very different. I hadn't seen anything like that either. But no, I got to go Tony Scott and Domino. So
that's awesome. I also studied film in school, and it was one of the worst things, I think, for me, because I thought movies were the most exciting thing ever. I love visual storytelling. I love the world developments, the way you can create different languages and really simply tell rules of like, this is what this universe is that you're in. I just think it's fantastic. And then I would hear people suck all the life out of these conversations and talk like only about specific directors in these grandiose ways. But then Hennenlotter or somebody wouldn't get anything. And I'm like, well, this person's doing these crazy inventive things with very little budget, but they're not looked in the same, the whole art house thing. And like, so that I made a conscious effort that a lot of stuff I just wouldn't ever probably be talking about on the podcast, just because, one, I'm not that articulate unless I would be quoting some heady person's thing about French New Wave or something, but it's honestly not how my brain works. And so it's just like, I'm not going to put on airs. I'm not going to pretend. And also, I'd rather listen to someone talk about Domino than Seventh Seal or whatever it is that I've already heard so much about. So, and then, oh, get this. So one of the last film classes I ever took, when I finally was just like, I got to get out of college, I slid all my credits over and I said, what can I get? And then I just left. I graduated.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had a major in women's studies and a minor in film. So that's what I could do. Yeah. I could show movies at a shelter, I guess. I don't know. But I took this horror film class, and the lady that was teaching it was like, I'm going to show you the best horror movie of all time.
Oh, and I was like,
me too. I love horror films. I can't wait to, I mean, which thing? And she's like, this is quintessentially the best horror film of all time. And I was like, in your opinion? And she's like, I'm teaching the class. This is the one of all time. And I was like, already a little on the rocks with this teacher. And that film was Hannibal.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's the correct response.
All the things are running in my brain. Hannibal
shouldn't
wow.
In anyone's mind. And I laughed out loud, wasn't trying to be a jerk, but that response you had was the exact right response. You're just like, no. I saw that in the theater and was like, this is not great. I mean, since then, I think you can find enjoyment in it, but I was really put off by this film and the fact that this was the greatest horror movie of all time.
To make a declarative statement like that, such a strong statement, is like, this better be good, you know? It better be, even if I don't think it's the best, at least I should like know what's in the conversation.
Oh
like
my
The Exorcist
gosh.
Or
yeah.
Something, you know? Wouldn't Hannibal have just come out recently too?
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't have been that old? Like, wow, that's bananas.
It was like insane. It was unbelievable. I barely passed that class because I just stuck to my, I was like, no, we're going to go to the mat on this one because this is nowhere near the conversation you're putting it at the top of.
No. And to say just another thing about that whole experience, I joked about it on my show before. I was there for one semester, like the fall of 05, and I was out because I realized this industry was not for me.
Yeah.
Because it's a nomadic lifestyle. It's a very hard lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. I don't like to be, I'm a home buddy. I don't be away with my family. I was very homesick because I was 5 hours away from home. I was driving home like every weekend. So I just bailed. I was like, this is not for me. And our professor was weird too for the film class I had. Nice enough guy, but he only wanted to talk about documentaries, which is, they're a fine, oh, you know, they're great. Documentaries are great. But I was like, this is not just a documentary class. It's supposed to be just about all kinds of film. And he like, I think he thought they were such a superior art form to narrative movies.
Yeah.
And I feel like he said that as much a couple times. And I'm like, whoa, 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 buddy. I do not agree.
Yeah.
You know, weird thing about, I think because he was a documentary filmmaker.
Oh, this checks really, out then. Yes.
I mean, I think he said that. It's all kind of a blur. I remember being really annoyed because I'm like, you don't got to shit on narrative movies like this. And I'm like, can we talk about some other stuff? Yeah, it was really weird. It was not a great film class.
He's like, another thing about March of the Penguins is like, wait, what? We're back to that again?
Oh, yeah. That was a weird time. But Domino is wonderful, as I talked about Unscottable on my show.
Yes.
Like, we sang the praises of Domino. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and that's a great time to plug that you have gone through all of the films of Tony Scott.
The plan is to have the last episode out on August 19th, which when I was plotting these out, I was going month by month, you know, dropping one a month. When I kind of looked at how the calendar was going to fall, I was like, oh, that's so weird. The last episode of Unscottable is going to fall in August. And Tony Scott passed away in August 2012. So it's a 10-year anniversary of his passing. So August 19th, I think, is my plan to put the last episode. I couldn't think of a better way to kind of honor him and end the whole thing. I was like, it just seems weirdly fitting. I didn't plan it to end then. It just kind of worked out. And I was like, this is too weird a coincidence. I really need to just, I'm just going to end it there. It's the perfect way to end it. And yeah, so it'll be wrapping up soon. So I'm very sad about it, actually. I don't want it to stop, but it has to, sadly, very sadly. So mostly because I have no more Tony Scott movies to watch or talk about.
That's
always a bummer. And so, but it's been great. I mean, I keep telling people, I don't think I'm going to do another director series just because I don't know. I don't know who to pick. And then it's like, it's a commitment. I like to fly by seat of my pants too. And like, even to have one thing I have to do every month, I'm like, oh, I just want to, even though I love doing it,
right?
I just kind of like don't like being pinned down by anything. I just want to completely make the schedule up on the fly and just do whatever. So I don't know. Maybe one day down the road, I'll do another director series. But right now, I'm just going to leave it at Unscottable, which I'm very happy with, and be done with it.
Yeah. So I highly recommend people, if you haven't heard all of those episodes, go back and listen to them. Domino being one of them, and Collateral as well. So two films we've covered in this episode. Is Collateral?
Well, yeah, Collateral was with Lindsay Anschlockenau. And it's Michael Mann, but it was...
That's Michael Mann. Yeah. Wait, didn't we cover just another Tony Scott, or am I just...
I mentioned Man on Fire.
Man on Fire came out
the same year as Collateral. It's confusing.
Okay.
Nope.
I said
a lot of things, Dirk. I apologize. I've been talking. Like,
oh, I get Ridley Scott mixed up. I said that one time when I was talking to you about Tony Scott, and I was like, God damn, can I not keep any of these correct? So embarrassing, but nobody's perfect.
We've said a lot very quickly. It's okay. So, yeah.
My pick was not Domino. It was Diary of a Mad Black Woman, which was not what you chose. So I was wrong again at what you were into when you were 18.
Oh.
Well, here we are. The year is 2006. Matt's final teen year. Sure, Happy Feet, Over the Hedge, and Click come out in theaters, but so does Little Man, Aragon, and Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties. A lot to choose from. But also, James Blunt releases You're Beautiful, Niles Barkley does Crazy, and Trace Adkins sings Honky Tonk Badonkadonk. Will any of this color Matt's final choice? We'll hear right now as Matt tells us his final pick for his final teen year. Matt, what is your selection?
Oh boy, I wish you had not reminded me of Honky Tonk Badonkadonk.
It's going to be playing in your head when you lay down to go to bed.
Haunted by. I had an ex-girlfriend who was big into country, and I'm sorry everyone likes it. I cannot stand country music.
Sure, same.
At all. And I was forced to listen to it, and that song in particular I thought was god-awful.
It's poetry. Honky Tonk Badonkadonk.
It was kind of amusing the first time.
Half
after a while
half
I couldn't
it.
Do it. Okay, so this one kind of feel like I'm ending on a whimper because I had my pick. And then I realized I didn't see it in a theater. I did see it the same year that it came out. I saw it the same year it came out, but I saw it on DVD later.
You can mention it.
Okay.
But what's your pick?
I'll do two, because, you know, why not? We're here. So the one that I was going to mention that I did not see in a theater, but I did see it that year on DVD, was Running Scared with Paul Walker.
Oh, sure.
Brought up many times, because I haven't shut about it since I've seen it. I'm not stopped talking about it, because I remember so distinctly, this movie was so memorable. I rented it on a whim from Redbox or something with a movie that I watched first that I thought was really bad called Ultraviolet.
Yes, terrible.
Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, awful.
I tried to rewatch it.
The guy that did Equilibrium, too, I think.
And I didn't like that either. And I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I know we have some friends that like that movie, and I could not.
It's terrible.
I thought that movie would have been totally my thing at like 14 or 15.
Right, sure.
But watching it, I watched it last year for the first time, and I couldn't get into it. And I feel bad because I know we have, I think Mike Scott, our friend, is a fan of it, I think.
Oh, no, but... I'm sorry, Mike. That's like what you like.
Mike, definitely like what you like. I just couldn't get into it. And then I had not seen Equilibrium when I saw Ultraviolet, and I thought it was very bad. I tried to watch it a couple years ago to see if it was bad as I remembered, and I turned off within 10 minutes. I was like, oh, yeah, no, this is still bad. So that happened. And then middle of the night, because this time I was keeping really weird hours. I feel like it was up all night. I put on Running Scared. I was like, Paul Walker, the guy from Fast and the Furious, what's this going to be? It comes in so hot. Yeah. It's so violent. And I was like, what is this movie? It's very good all the way through. There's an insane sequence in the middle that literally had me, I was like laying down on the couch, and it was one of those things where I'm like, what? And I'm going up. I'm like, my head's up.
Right.
I'm sitting up. And by the end, I'm standing up. By the end, I'm like, what in the hell? And I'm like, cheering on what happens in the scene. If people have seen the movie, I think they know what I'm talking about. It involves like two creepy kidnappers and her, that whole sequence with her, and she finds these two people, completely up out of my chair cheering at like 2 a.m. or whatever it was. And I was like, this movie's great, and no one talks about it. Again, it bombed in theaters, and that was my pick, so I caught it later. A movie I do also support that I don't think people like that much is Silent Hill, based on the video game, which came out in 86. I really like this movie. It is very hardcore. It's not what I expected. Fairly creepy. It's very violent. There was some stuff that completely shocked me and my friends we saw in the theater. Like, we were just aghast at some of the things that were happening. I think it's very stylish. And, you know, I just have thought this is kind of underrated all these years. I think it's a cool movie. It looks very cool. It's got this cool vibe to it. The games are some of the creepiest things I've ever seen in my life. I can't even play them. I like watch people play them. And I still get freaked out. The movie captures that decently, I think. It's not as scary, but I remember I expected nothing, because video game movies have a bad reputation anyway.
Yeah.
And I went into this like, all right, I'll see the Silent Hill movie. And I really liked it. So those are my double picks for 06. I think two underrated movies.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Silent Hill. I, you know, wasn't a huge Resident Evil fan for those movies. I watched all of them, but I watched all the Underworld movies. So, you know, I just kind of commit to these things, I guess. But I thought both the Silent Hill movies, I thought, were very fun, and I loved the way the worlds transition with the ash peeling down and stuff. It looked really cool.
And I just thought
they did a great job with that world building and the fog and kind of nightmare logic stuff. And the tone of it, I think, fit really well. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, because I would say 06 was kind of a weird year for me. I think I felt a little burned by the film school experience, and I kind of felt like I wasn't a film guy anymore. And I kind of felt like I came back down to earth on like, I wasn't following all this stuff and reading all this stuff. I still like movies, obviously, but I kind of felt like I didn't have the passion for it quite as much after that. So, yeah, I'm kind of glad we're stopping here, because it would have gotten sad for a few years. It took me years to really get back into it. It might have almost been 10 years. It really was. I started a job where I could listen to podcasts. I started finding like movie podcasts, and I found F This Movie, which I know we're fans of. And that really got me back into movies. That was like 2015. So it took almost like 10 years to really feel like, oh yeah, I remember I love movies. What am I doing? You know, I've been kind of like spinning my wheels for the past 10 years. I was more into like music and video games. I feel like I kept having a thing. I'm like, oh, I'm really into music. And then I'm into video games. And I got into like football, which I was never a sports guy. I know. Sorry, Derek. I'm sorry to disappoint you. But I did get into like fantasy football and just watching football. And I think because my friends were all into it and I was watching sports more. But then
I don't like this chapter. We stopped at 19.
I'm sorry. This is extra. This is bonus. But then no, I came back around. And then it was really rediscovering the first love again. I was like, oh yeah, I love movies. What am I doing? And now I host a movie podcast. It all came full circle somehow. It all came back around.
That's so funny, because we're very similar in that way. I didn't think I was gonna make movies, but I thought I was gonna do acting and that sort of stuff, because I very much enjoyed being somebody else. Like, it was just like, I was not cool with the cards I was dealt. So if I was being somebody else, life was a lot easier. And, you know, improv and things like that, if you're living in that moment, you can't be hypercritical of yourself, because you have to react to what these other people are doing. Mm-hmm. And then I was in a film, I can't say what it was because I walked off the set, but I got a feeling for what that life was like. And like you were talking about with the nomadic life of a director, what acting is in film capacity is very different than the theater, where you're kind of part of a group that's doing something collectively. And in that, you're very much just like a hired gun. It's just you solo. The other people don't like you or care about you. The hair and makeup can be the same way. Donald Sutherland can be the same way. And so I was just like, fuck this. This is not for me. And so I just stopped paying attention to acting. which was kind of what I was into in the movies and everything, and then taking film stuff, and then I was like, that's not going to be the thing. But I didn't realize I still related to the world basically through movies. I would still go see movies, and that's what I guess I was talking to people about, but I just didn't listen to what I was talking about. And then it was when my friend JL literally gave me that book of VHS cover art where I was like, oh, this is like my childhood. And then it was like unlocking a door and going through the whatever, the coat closet in Narnia or whatever. I was just like, oh my gosh, this really matters to me. This means a lot to me. And, you know, now through the podcast, I've met so many amazing people like yourself where I'm just like, I wouldn't know these people if I didn't open up and talk about movies. So it's like, oh, wow, this is... Movies have actually given me a lot, and there was just a period of my life where I just wasn't even talking about it, really. Or I was, but it was to people that were like, why are you talking to me about this?
Like, I mean, it's like nobody cared when I was talking about it. They're like, I don't know, man. I remember getting like a huge argument with somebody about Indiana Jones and Temple of the Crystal Skull. And I remember I feel like I just... It wasn't not the Temple of the Crystal Skull, I don't know what I'm saying, but yeah, the Crystal Skull movie.
Yeah.
And I was so angry, and one of the guys in our group was just like, who cares, man, it's just movies. And I feel like that, like, outraged
me. You're like, Shia LaBeouf was swinging on vines with monkeys. You're cool with that?
He's like, it's just a fun movie. And I'm like, it should be better. And it was just one of those things where I'm like, I can't explain to people that, you know, just aren't as into it. I think I almost felt like I failed the whole thing, too. So that was a little bitter. And you know what's funny? I don't remember how the sequence went, but I know because I was so into reading Roger Ebert's reviews and his great movie books that I was like, I want to be a film critic. I think that was my backup plan if director didn't work out. When that was like a viable career choice, sure. I was like, I'll be the critic for my local newspaper. This is only 15-ish years ago. Think how insane that would be now if a child was like, I want to write for the local paper. Like, that sounds so old-fashioned, I feel like. I thought at the time, I was like, when our old critic passes away, I'll take his spot. And that was 15-plus years ago. And that guy just died this year, our local critic.
Oh, like, wow.
But I never agree with that man.
Time
either.
To make your
nice
move.
Man. He seemed like a very nice man, but I read his reviews and get so tell my mom, like, this guy's what he's talking about. He's an idiot. He hated Blade 2. What kind of guy?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so I feel like critic was my backup. So I feel like, and I think we know now, I follow into people on Twitter that I don't think critic is like a viable career option. Or I don't think it paid like $20 an article or something. I may be wrong. I don't know. But your freelance work, it's not as glamorous as being Roger Ebert or, you know, these kind of critics. But this kind of scratches the itch that I feel like I had, which was like, I just need to talk about movies. I think knowing myself now, I don't think I needed to make movies. I just need to talk about movies. I'm not a great writer. I'm not a terrible writer. But this is my format. So
yeah,
thank God podcast came along. Because yes, again, I met people like you and all of our friends. And I'm like, this is what I needed the whole time. Like, I didn't need to make movies or write about them. I just need to talk to people that love movies as much as I do. And it's been very fulfilling. So, and this was so much fun. This was a great exercise, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. That was the whole goal. My final selection was my super ex-girlfriend.
All movies I forgot even existed.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Same.
Oh, you know which one I think we skipped over? My 2001, my sleepover pick.
Yeah.
That was the one I said was, this movie's weird because it had a very long, Donnie Darko was the one I was going to pick for 01. Because it played for festivals and limited release. And that was a movie that was like huge finding. I remember other kids my age were like, have you heard of Donnie Darko? It was like whispered about, you know, it was like, because no one saw it in the theater. It was like one of those Oh, well, you were one of the lucky ones, I think. In my little suburban town, a bunch of teenagers who, it was like a thing. There was two movies like this. This and the Boondock Saints got passed around on DVD. Like, have you heard about this movie? It was something no one saw in the theater. For the most part. And they were like, you got to see this weird movie. And like, I remember me and my friend were like, whoa, Donnie Darko's like the smartest, most mind you've ever seen. Friend was on like AOL chums, if that really takes you that time, like looking up theories about Donnie Darko and sending me stuff. Oh, I think this is what's going on, Donnie Darko. And that movie was a really big deal at the time. And that was just a really cool, different
type
of movie.
That was 2001?
It was, but I don't think...
It's the same year as Highway, I think.
It came out at Sundance early in the year.
Well,
and
what
then it
year
got
was
a...
Bubble Boy?
That might have been the same year.
Whoa, he had a banger, 2001. Those three movies came out.
I weirdly watched Bubble Boy a lot on TV. I don't know why. It was always on. It was the same year as 01. Yeah, but like...
Whoa. He had that Matthew Lillard thing where he like goes to LA or whatever and does like three movies. Well, I mean, nobody saw Highway, but three movies in a year. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that was a big one. That felt like the first independent type movie I'd seen on my own where I'm like, oh, this is for us, you know, the teenagers, to find the adults don't get Donnie Darko.
You know? That's true.
It was just, it felt special, I felt like, at the time. It was like, this is weird and different. So,
to recap, couldn't you walk us through the movies that you chose, just each one?
Oh, God. Okay. 2000, Mission Impossible 2.
There it is.
2001 was my sleepover picks with the two-hander of Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, the double punch. And 2002 was Blade 2.
Nice.
2003 was Kill Bill Volume 1.
Yep.
2004 was Collateral. 2005 was Domino. And 2006 was, I guess I'm going to say, another double pick of Running Scared and Silent Hill.
Awesome. And my selections were Dr. T and the Women, Made in Manhattan, Osmosis Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Pulp Fiction, Ella Enchanted, Diary of a Mad Black Woman, and My Super Ex-Girlfriend. There it is. Well, Matt, thank you.
Sorry you went 0 for 6, but wouldn't that have been amazing if I picked one of your joke picks?
Yeah.
I was really into my super ex-girlfriend.
It's possible. You could have been like, you know, I was 14. I liked Jennifer Lopez. Made in Manhattan was just really good. I mean, you did see Osmosis Jones. I felt like that could have been.
I did. I at least saw that movie in a theater. During the summer, I think, when I feel like we had nothing else to do, and Mom, I think we got dropped off at the theater and we're like, go watch a movie for a couple hours. And yeah, I have a weirdly distinct memory of Osmosis Jones. I don't know why, but it's like,
I love that.
It sticks out in my mind as a good time. So
we had a dollar theater at one point in our mall, and they had Edward Scissorhands for like years, it felt like. And so whenever we just had a dollar, we'd go see Edward Scissorhands. We saw it, my friend Aaron and I saw it, I don't even know honestly how many times, but definitely double digits, just as something to do, which is bizarre, but there you go. That's what happened. But Matt, thank you for being our first guest for VHS Presents Screen Teens. Your podcast is Film Feast. I almost said Final Feast, where I was like, wait, it's not Final Feast.
That's coming soon. No,
okay. The Final Feast.
We'll switch to for like October horror movies. No. Yes, Film Feast. It's everywhere you get podcasts. New episodes usually come out Mondays. I will say, yeah, by the time this comes out, I think we'll be kind of doing a bi-weekly schedule for a little bit, because So basically I'll be doing a couple episodes. I'll release them bi-weekly through September. I'm trying to get ready for October because there's 5 Mondays. I want to do all horror episodes, but I have a very busy October. My sister is getting married smack dab in the middle of the month. I'm going to be out of town, I think, the first weekend. It's going to be a very busy month in general. So I have to kind of get ahead of that. So I'll be busy in September. So it's going to be a little weird, but usually most Mondays you can find Film Feast episodes, and you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Film Feast Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at MapLit87. Follow me and the podcast on Instagram at Film Feast, all one word. And just thank you for letting me talk again. I feel like I talked a lot on this episode. I said a lot of things, threw a lot of titles at you.
We had a lot of stuff to cover, and I think we did it in a very expedited pace. I think we nailed
it. I think it was pretty succinct. I ramble on, so this was cool. Yeah, this was a ton of fun. I love doing this. I was so excited this episode when I was making the list. I was like, I can't wait to talk about these movies, because I love all of them. You know, they all mean a lot to me. So
that's excellent. Well, I hope you enjoyed the process. Thank you again for sharing some of what made you the cinephile you are today. As always, I'm Dirk Marshall, and this has been VHS Presents Screen Teens. I almost said new releases and late returns, but that's not right. It's Screen Teens. Till next time.